But can you please remind me of some skillful ways to deal with anger? This is a biggie, isn't it? There's a lot in the teachings about anger in terms of antidotes and things that we can do to address it. And the primary one that gets repeated is doing the metta practice. It's one of those things where, sort of in the moment, when the anger is up, you know, it's sort of like it feels like it's a little too late at that point, you know. Certainly we've been in situations. I know I had one at the monastery one time where a fella just drove me nuts, you know, and I would get so pissed. And every time I would walk into a room, you know, and see him there, it was like I was just ready. And sometimes I would go looking for him so I could hate him. He's just really wanting to get into a state about it, you know. But so what I would do for weeks, I mean literally weeks, I would be doing, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you be, and getting, doing the metta phrases and all like that. And of course, you know, you can't fake it. I mean, it's not, that wasn't what was happening in my heart, you know. So, but then again, too, the metta practice does bring up the states that you need to look at, so that has to be said. But at any rate, finally, after a couple of weeks of trying to actually dispel it using metta, I actually turned in a way to the investigation of it, you know. And that came quite dramatically and suddenly in a moment where, you know, what, right in the midst of doing the phrases, you know, may you be happy, may you be peaceful, may you be free, I just stopped dead in my tracks and I said, I hate this guy. And just really let, I mean, it was so spontaneous and so real. It was like a lot more authentic than the previous moments, you know, where I was actually acknowledging what was happening for me in that moment. And then talking to one of the nuns about it, you know, and realizing that this is, in a way, the beginning of the end of the state, and also the point at which you need to greet that kind of moment with a lot of metta in your heart. You know, so it's like it's infinitely mindful, aware of what's happening. But also softened by this state that doesn't then turn it back on yourself, which is often the case, isn't it? You just kind of turn it back, what's wrong with me? Why am I so hateful? You know, so it has to be held in the heart with the optimal softness and kindness towards oneself. And I was telling Ajahn Amaro about this one time, you know, and I said, you know, the metta practice is great, but I'll be honest, I've never gotten past metta for myself, you know. And he said, well, that's good. You know, that's you know, where we need it most and right where you want to be, just to keep doing that. I mean, if you spend a lifetime of trying to soften one's own heart so that in situations like this, we can at least short-circuit that tendency to turn it back on ourselves and hate ourselves, you know, complicate hating others with hating ourselves for doing it. So I found that to be very, very helpful advice. There's some other things that are said about working with this, that one can, you know, presumably when you're lost in a state of ill will or anger, it's towards a person or a situation or a condition in your life. And so that if it's towards a person, it's said to endeavor, you know, to contemplate, look for their good points, you know. And that's kind of like, you know, the when you've got a toothache, put your attention on your knee, you know, and it can be very, very helpful. Just go to the place, this stuff is coming at you, go to a place in our recollections of them to try to find a softness, you know, try to find the goodness. And actually I did this with this fella, and you know, it was very, 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 very effective, because it made me realize that lots of times when people are unkind to us, and this was the case with this fellow, it's like, you know, maybe that's all they know. You know, maybe it's like, you know, it's just a filter through which their effort to make contact is coming. You know, what if all you've ever known is thrashing and bashing and being beat up? You know, then the stuff that's going to come out of you is going to be that kind of behavior. And that actually turned out to be true in this case. I actually found out that this guy had a kind of crush on me, you know, and this was like his way of making contact, you know. He didn't know, you know, this was it. And I thought, that's amazing, you know, but it opens your heart, you know, if you can just not come back. I mean, the nature of this kind of stuff is, you know, this comes at you, you come back with this. Well, you know, what if you don't do that? What if you come back with a whole different state? Very, very effective. And it said that if it's an object or if it's a situation, to contemplate impermanence, you know, just to hold in the mind that this is this condition will pass. This is an impermanent condition, and can be a great inroad for actually insight into impermanence. One of the things that's said is to contemplate karma. And I thought I'd mention this just to also bring some recollection and vitality to the things that we chant, because this is one of the chants that we do, that we're heirs to our karma. You know, what does that mean? We're the heirs to our karma. Well, this hatred that I feel right now is a fruit. It's a result of past actions. You know, I've been hateful in the past, and so it has a propensity to arise. And sure enough, here it is again. And so I, you know, it's like that situation of being stuck in your own stuff. You know, I did it before, and I'm about to do it again if I don't see this condition. And what can be very, very helpful in dealing with being the heirs to our karma is the realization that there is no unwholesome karma in the arising of that state. It's only in what we do when that state arises. You know, so that's huge. I mean, just consider that. That right there is the potential for freedom. And the sort of the point at which you can not accept your inheritance, you know. It's like, no, this, I do not accept this. I'm going to take a different path. You know, very, very, very rich, very powerful moment. One thing that can be very helpful in dealing with ill will is just contemplating the nature of these states. And I have found this to be very rich. It's like, just look at how huge these states are and how powerful they are. You know, Ajahn Suchito says, you know, sometimes even mindfulness is no match for a full-blown mental hindrance. You know, it'll just whoosh into the system and completely take it over. So, you know, contemplating that, you have to know that. You know, just consider. And that, I mean, I was telling what some people in a group today, one of the very powerful moments in my own practice came when I sort of got it that I am ignorant. You know, and got it, the extent of that ignorance and the extent of the craving. And it sounds like doom and gloom, but it was a very happy moment. It was like, whoa, you know, this is going to take some time, you know. And it just kind of snapped me out of time and snapped me out of all the goal making and things like that about practice. You know, just settle down, you know, you're out to lunch. And it's going to take some work. One of the things that I'm reminded of with this is that when I was on retreat one time with, and it was a long Upandita retreat, and I was doing walking meditation in the lower walking room at IMS, and there was a woman there who was doing the walking meditation with us, but she wasn't doing it right, you know, and she was doing, like, we were told to go slow, and then to go, you know, sort of go at a normal pace to begin with, and then go in the second period of the walking to slow it down a little more, and then at the third period of it to slow it down a little bit more. Well, she was doing just the opposite. So by the time you got really slow, she was racing, you know. and I was so annoyed, you know, so irritated by this. And it went on for days. And I kept going to the same walking lane, and she kept going to the same walking lane. And so there we were, you know. And I finally had the courage to acknowledge what was going on and to report it in an interview. And say, you know, this is what's happening, you know, I'm just getting really pissed off by this woman, you know. And so he says to me, anger arises easily. You should avoid the lower walking room. It was really helpful. It's like, oh, you know, I don't have to keep going here, you know. It's like avoiding the occasion of sin, you know, that kind of thing. Just acknowledging the extent, the nature of these states, you know, that's the way they do. And actually, that's also a reminder of another antidote, which is to associate with people who aren't that way. You know, that every one of the hindrances, this is one of the antidotes that the Buddha mentions. You know, you want to overcome being piggy, don't hang out with people who are piggy, you know. You want to overcome aversion and ill will, you know, find people who are tranquil and kind and hang out with those, you know. But it's not the way it goes. It's not the way we go naturally. Like, I deal with a whole lot of restlessness and agitation, and I find myself, looking for, you know, people that I can get crazy with, you know. It's like that's the, I want to, you know, so what the energy wants to find its match, you know. Or you're drinking a lot of caffeine. That's what, you know, oh, I'm so restless, I'm so agitated. You know, drink some coffee. He's like, drink some coffee, that'll help, you know. That's what I'll do. It's nuts, you know. But just learning after years of doing that the, you know, you don't need caffeine, Gloria, you know, just stay away from caffeine. It's enough already. But one last thing, which is associated with the other one that came to mind, is the one winter I was at Amaravati for the winter retreat, and Ajahn Sumedho was teaching it. Turns out, it was the winter of the first George Bush Gulf War. And, you know, that happened, I think it began in January. So the retreat is January, February, March. So here we were on retreat. Well, we had no knowledge that the war had begun or that there was a war happening out there, which was actually, that's an interesting contemplation in itself. You know, if a tree falls in the forest, you know it's happening, kind of thing. But anyway, since we didn't know what was happening, and this at the time was clearly an event that had implications for the whole planet, Ajahn Sumedho said he got himself a radio, and he started to listen to the radio, to listen to reports. And he said he hadn't listened to the radio for 20 years, 25 years at that time. But given this event, he wanted to keep up with it, and he wanted to be able to tell us what was happening. So he did, and he would tell us the stories, you know, about these smart missiles that could, you know, be launched from out in the ocean and go in the front door of the building, you know what I mean? it's like amazing technology, you know, that we should have that kind of technology and use it in this way. It's like, you know, he would invite us to contemplate that. And And then, but the big thing was he would invite us to contemplate how we felt about Saddam Hussein. You know, we could say the same thing about George Bush or about anybody, you know, these world leaders, how we felt about it. And just to really let it go, you know, let it rip. You know, he was the perfect tyrant, and you could really get some good hatred juices going in relation to this person. And so to do that, and you'd have us sitting there like that, and it's like, you know, you could feel it. And then he'd say, okay, now realize that what you're feeling right now is the hatred in your own heart. You know, it's not Saddam Hussein. It's not George Bush. It's the hatred in your own heart. And to contemplate that, to feel that, is certainly important for those of us practicing trying to overcome ill will, to consider how it is that we're holding these world leaders, the decision makers. I mean, it has to be said that, you know, we're living on a planet full of people who aren't awake. And some of the people who aren't awake, unfortunately, are people who have the power to make decisions that affect masses of people, and these kinds of things happen. And that's one way to sit with it.